Podglomerate original. Hey, Trailweight listeners. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to quickly tell you about another podcast, The Carbon Copy. Climate change can often feel like a far-off problem or tend to be siloed as a scientific story. But everything is a climate story. And that's where The Carbon Copy comes in. Hosted by climate reporter Stephen Lacey, The Carbon Copy covers climate change by connecting it to the significant cultural, economic, business, and tech trends that shape the world around us. Produced by Postscript Media and Canary Media, The Carbon Copy informs, enlightens, and sparks curiosity about how a changing climate affects our lives. From Russia's war on Ukraine to the housing crisis to decisions handed down from the Supreme Court, The Carbon Copy explores how climate change and the energy transition connect to today's biggest stories. To hear more, follow and subscribe to The Carbon Copy on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Hey, podcast listeners. Are you planning holiday travel, dreaming of your next big adventure, or finally satisfying your wanderlust? If so, the next step might just be checking out Expedia's podcast, Out Travel the System. More than travel hacks, Out Travel the System breaks down travel-related stereotypes and showcases just how much there is to see and experience in the world. You'll hear from expert guests like Condé Nast's former creative director, Yolanda Edwards, and industry pioneer, Jessica Nabongo, who is the first Black woman to visit all the countries in the world. However, and wherever you travel, follow Out Travel the System everywhere you listen to podcasts. Having hiked over 100 miles, Rocky and I continued on the trail up a long, dry climb with little shade. The new food and supplies we had just picked up weighed heavy in our packs as we walked through manzanita, brushes, and thickets. We continued on through pines and eventually over Selden Pass. With the significant passes behind us, this felt so much easier. It was gradual and only had a small patch of snow still. We passed lakes and crossed rivers. We walked until our feet grew sore and our appetites couldn't wait any longer. I calculated that I was probably burning over 6,000 calories a day. It was tough to get that much, even when dinner was a package of ramen noodles and a packet of instant mashed potatoes, plus whatever chicken, tuna, spam we had to mix in. Our bodies were changing, whether we wanted them to or not. I'm Andrew Stephen, and this is Trailweight, a podcast about hiking outdoors and the lessons learned along the way. I'm sitting on a log, eating spam slices, two slices of spam wrapped in a tortilla, and all I can think about is how close we are to Red's Meadow and real food. Hamburgers, French fries, milkshakes. What are you most looking forward to?
Oh, hamburger.
Yeah.
And fries.
And a milkshake. Very creative.
Yeah, and a shower.
We walked on, entering a stretch of trail lined with granite slabs and flowing water. Forests and meadows freckled the landscape alongside white and yellow flowers. For the first time on the trip, I started thinking about its ending. So much of the last year had been preparing for this hike, getting ready for this moment. And then I was here, actually doing it. Now, getting closer to the ending than the start, my mind began to drift from being present and thinking of what's next. What would returning home look like? Would I be changed? Would I be ready for what was to come?
Today we got a pocket of cell phone reception and we were flooded with texts and emails and phone calls and messages, and it was nice because we were able to check in with some family, but ultimately it was just a reminder that we're days away from finishing, and the real world is back waiting for us, and this adventure and I guess lack of responsibility or a different type of responsibility is coming to an end.
Knowing the simplicity of each day on the trail was a welcome change to the randomness back home. Even with a well-scheduled week, the unknowns in the city seem harder to manage than the unknowns in nature. Maybe it's just that it was a change of pace, or maybe I was naive. But I was really enjoying the new life hiking was bringing me. I felt a nagging feeling as I got back on trail. The red circles on my phone with various numbers inside begged for my attention. It's impossible to close that box once it's been open. Once the notification is there, you can't unsee it. And even as I craved certain aspects of city life, showers, home-cooked food, there were other parts that I wanted to live without. This is normal, and we all do our own version of this. But living in nature, the divide and the pull seemed greater. We took the trail back up again, climbing towards Silver Pass. Tracing the switchbacks, we made camp near Silver Pass Lake. Rocky and I set up camp in solitude, having not seen a single hiker for the past several hours, or the next several after that. The creek near our campsite provided a soothing soundtrack as we rested from another day's hard work. Rocky dreamt about Taco Bell, and I kept tripping out of the moment to think about life after the trail. Soon, we'd be entering Red's Meadow and Devil's Post Pile. Two places I'd been before, and two places that not only had roads and out-of-towners, but also pockets of cell reception, and more reminders that this hike, and the feelings that kept over me, wouldn't last forever. This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, BetterHelp. When learning how to backpack, one of my first purchases was a small, portable butane stove. And the first thing I saw when I opened the box was a small folded-up set of instructions. After a quick read, I turned it on, and it worked without a problem. Unfortunately, not everything comes with a set of instructions. And life is one of those things without a user manual, and most of it isn't problem-free. So when life's not working, it's normal to feel stuck, lost, and unsure of how to proceed. We may not have an instruction booklet for life, but thankfully there are people trained to help us navigate a career change, work through relationship issues, and help us approach feelings of stress, anger, or anxiety. I've personally found therapy to be beneficial in talking through complex issues, processing pain, learning productive skills, and so much more. And BetterHelp has connected more than 3 million people with the help they need. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try or are having trouble finding the right help, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, and affordable. And as the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists, all available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. You can easily switch to a new therapist anytime if things aren't clicking. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/wait. That's better, BetterHelp.com/WEIGHT. If you're looking for another podcast to listen to, check out Vanishing Postcards. Hosted by Evan Stern, Vanishing Postcards is all about being outside, on the open road, and seeing new places. In the latest season, Vanishing Postcards invites listeners to drive cross-country on Route 66 and experience everything from a dance in Tulsa to an eating contest in the Texas Panhandle, to a morning on the Santa Monica Pier. Vanishing Postcards explores how this iconic road's past, present, and future are revealed through the stories of the people and places on Route 66 today. If you're looking for an episode to try, check out Postcards from the Mother Road, The Roots of Route 66, and hear all about how the legend of Route 66, which spans almost 7,000 miles, came to be. You can join their road trip by following Vanishing Postcards wherever you get your podcasts. The podcast project kept creeping into my head too. I knew I would be making the show, and I kept thinking about the story I wanted to tell. It was my story, but it also wasn't.
Put on my headphones?
You don't have to if you don't want to.
Is that what people do?
Yeah, 50-50.
Okay.
I kept thinking about a conversation I had a few years earlier with Chris Kelly.
Hi, I'm Chris Kelly.
Chris was the head writer on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Or co-head writer. Co-head writer.
Co-head writer.
And co-created the show The Other Two with Sarah Schneider. And before that, he was a writer with The Onion.
Well, not to be dramatic, but around the time I was leaving The Onion was when my mother passed away. So I went home and I was living with her towards the end of my time at The Onion. And The Onion was really great about it. And for a while they were letting me leave and they were like, go be with your mom. A lot of them like chipped in to buy me flights back and forth.
That's so nice.
And were just like, go. And when you need to come back or want to come back, or if you want to come back, you have a place. So I was like dealing with that at the same time. But then once my mother had passed away and I'd been with my family for a while and I just took some more time off and I traveled. I did that like gorgeous, like my mother's passed away and I'm traveling through Europe and I looked out train windows and just was so dramatic and self-obsessed with in my own sadness for so long. So I did like a 6-week European vacation of sadness and growth and pretending it was in a movie. And then
you can see why this was on my mind. There were similarities in our stories, and instead of a podcast, some of Chris's life events eventually made it into a movie, Other People.
Yeah.
It echoes, obviously. It's somewhat autobiographical from what your story is. Was writing it something you felt like you had to do to sort of process this and deal with it? Is it just what you knew, so it's what you wrote? I'm curious now.
I believe, was this closure for you or something? And I don't like necessarily feel like that's the case, although maybe it is and I'm not aware or something.
Yeah.
But it was more like I had finished my first season at SNL. And I had also like written my first season. I worked for Broad City and obviously The Onion and Funny or Die. And I'd only done comedy before and I'd only done really like short form sketch comedy for the most part. And so I really wanted to, that first summer after SNL, I was like, I don't know if I'll be going back. I don't know what's next for me, but I should like try to create something that's like mine. That's like not under the umbrella of another company or that's not writing for the voice of The Onion or blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I want to write a feature. I don't know how to do that. I've never written, everything I've written has been like 3 minutes long. So I wanted to write a feature and I wanted to write something that was like more tonally in line with what I thought I would write if like I didn't have constraints, like, or like, and write something that was more tonally similar to the things I like, which are like comedy drama hybrids where like the comedy is like a little sadder, more somber, basically a comedy where people cry all the time. And I didn't know how to do that, and I kept trying to think about what to write and I kept coming back to this like time in my life and I don't know. I kept saying like, you shouldn't write about this because it's too like personal or it's like too autobiographical or like it's quote unquote like a cancer movie. And like, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there have been cancer movies before.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So like
cancer podcasts.
Like here are the like 20 reasons why I shouldn't do it. But then I was like, this is what I keep wanting to write about. And this is like what I know. And they say like, write what you know, especially when you're writing something for the first time. And I don't know. I just thought that there was stuff I like clearly like, this sounds so dramatic, but like wanted to say about that time. And so I kind of shut it all out and just wrote. And also because I wasn't writing because someone was like, will you write a movie? We want to make it. Like I didn't think it was going to get made. I was just like, let me write what I know. Let me write what I care about. Let me write about what interests me. And then as long as I'm happy with it, I could, if nothing happens, who cares?
Yeah.
But I can use it as a sample or something.
Or
so
just, and learn again, learning
just to learn
and
how
doing.
To do it. Yeah, exactly.
Writing what you know is something you hear a lot in creative circles and for good reason. Like Chris said, especially when you're writing something for the first time, it's an experience that only you can tell because you're the only one who knows the particulars. But it requires you to remember and relive those experiences. For difficult or traumatic events, this can be especially challenging. I want to avoid those moments and feelings. On the hike, I was also reliving an experience. A few years before this adventure, Rocky and I visited Red's Meadow and Devil's Postpile. We camped here for a quick vacation and walked through the mesmerizing basalt columns formed by cooling magma 100,000 years ago. From the top, these columns looked like hexagon-shaped tiles, and from below, they stretched upward towards the sky in awe-inspiring rows. When we were first here, it was under much different circumstances. My mom wasn't sick, I wasn't as introspective. To be honest, visiting Devil's Postpile was as much about checking a destination off a list as it was about marveling in the geological wonder. And when we saw the thru-hikers resting and resupplying at Red's Meadow, I never knew I would be one of them one day. But as I trained for this trip, I remembered that scene and played it over and over again in my head. Looking forward to buying Gatorade and eating a fresh-cooked meal from a restaurant after 18 or so days in the backcountry. This is a scene I wanted to relive. This was a movie I wanted to make.
What was it like making a movie that's about you and your family?
It was weird. It was weird because, like I said, I didn't like write it and then say, great, now let's make this baby. I just wrote it and then was like, oh, I hope someone reads this and like doesn't think it's terrible or that I suck. So once it actually happened and it was like, oh, I'm on set directing it, it was a little bizarre. But it was only good. I mean, the cast was so good that I like just felt very like lucky. Yeah.
Well, even that, like, was it weird casting these characters based out of your real life?
Yes and no, because I truly don't like think of it as like a full like mapping of my family. And it's not like the bones of the movie are true in that, like, my mom died, I'm gay, I do comedy, blah, blah, blah. Like, but it's not like moment for moment. So I wasn't like casting
it. It's not a biography.
Yeah. And I wasn't casting it being like, well, my dad is like this, so we got to get this. Or my sister looks like this. I was okay if it became its own thing, you know?
I learned something while making this podcast. At first I kept putting off writing and listening to the audio I had recorded on the trail, or the months leading up to the trip, or during the last few days of my mom's life. It was too painful. I wanted to avoid certain feelings. I didn't want to go through the pain again. But at some point, I sat down and started. And it was painful. But for better or for worse, there was a tipping point, and suddenly the story became its own thing. Even though it was my personal story, at times it felt like I was writing about someone else. It didn't sound like me on the recordings. I was separated from the story.
It's interesting. There seems to be a through line in of don't be afraid to throw away your darlings, but then also like there's strong personal ties to stuff like that.
Yeah.
And is there like a wrestling match that goes on, especially in something that, and of course it's not 100% biography.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's you know, the emotional stories and feelings that are real to your life, but then also like,
yeah,
I don't know, creating and having to have that confidence, but then also like, well, what makes the story better? And
yeah, you mean in terms of like cutting out a scene or something,
yeah, especially
in post that's not working, but it's like my mom said that or something.
Yeah.
That is interesting because at the end of the day, it's like a story. And so it needs to work as a movie. It needs to work as a story, which I think is the trickiest thing about, like, I was very aware of that the whole time because I know there's a trap that it's like, if you write a script based on your real life, there's a trap that it's you're just writing a journal entry, you know? And if you then direct a movie that you wrote based on your own life, you don't want to fall into the trap, like when you're directing, of being like, well, actually my mother was wearing a red shirt when she said this, why is she wearing a blue? Like, cause like, you're like, oh, you still have to change things. So that's when people ask how much of my movie is true. I'm like, I don't even know, 50%, 40%, like the big things are true, but then
the
some scenes are fully,
true.
Yeah. Like I would remember verbatim some things my mother said, for example, mm-hmm. but then some scenes around the things she said are completely fictionalized, but they were fictionalized. It was necessary to write these scenes to help support the thing she said, or you know what I mean? Like, so
when things can be made up and still be true.
Exactly. And so I don't know. I didn't like really feel precious, like in the edit of being like, I can't lose this. Or, I don't know. And also like writing a movie where you're like, you're writing yourself as like the lead, but you don't, you're like, so like theoretically, I guess you're the character is the protagonist, but then you're not like, I didn't want to like, I'm not like the hero of the movie. Yeah. Like I'm not like this perfect, whatever. So it was a weird exercise. Also like this happened 7 years ago. So it's like when I'm writing and directing this, I'm writing a version of myself from 7 years ago. So it's a constant like mental gymnastics. Yeah. It's like a real fuck. Like it's such a mind fuck of like trying to write a character that's you from 7 years ago to be like, what was I like then? Like, what were my insecurities? Or like, what was my strengths and what were my weaknesses? Or like, how did I suck? Or like, you know, yeah. I don't know. So yeah, it's weird to like step out and like look outside yourself and then like judge yourself. I don't know.
And probably beneficial at some point too. Like,
I mean, at the end of the day, I learned I had no faults. it was weird.
So I have no idea what day of the week it is, let alone the actual date of the...
Do you want me to tell you?
...month. It's just weird how when you're out here, you just completely lose track of a calendar.
I went straight in my brain. It's all in there.
Like, I don't know what day...
I have
day.
One of those pull a day off calendars.
Okay, how many days have we been hiking for? Yeah, it takes a while to remember.
No. I was just pulling another day off my calendar. It's a Simpsons.
It is. I think
Simpsons
it is.
Simpsons quote calendar.
I think it is the 15th
each day. Each day's a new Simpsons quote.
But what day of the week is it?
Wednesday.
It's because you just looked.
No, yes. It's because I have it in my brain.
The only reason I knew today was Wednesday is because I got a notification on my phone to water the houseplants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, our houseplants are probably dead. They're dead. We're murderer.
It's interesting hearing myself on these recordings from the hike. That was 2 years ago at the time I'm recording this episode. And then again to hear me even earlier talk with Chris Kelly. At times it feels like I'm not even listening to myself, but a different person. Time has an interesting way of creating that type of objectivity. My friend Monty Montipar, who's been helping me tell this story, shared something he learned telling stories for The Moth.
It's generally accepted that you have to give some time between big life events and telling a narrative story about them. In Moth world, I think they say 5 years for a loss, but up to 10 years for something complicated or traumatic. You have to be at a place where you can spend enough time with those moments to really get all the details and the angles and bring people back to them. And you have to be at a certain process with those events to get there. And then processing them for story is a whole other level of it. So it does take a long time. And by the time you've got there, you have some distance from yourself and from those events, which makes it more objective, but can also sometimes make it feel complicated or far away from your present self.
I feel like that's not so much a rule as it is an observation. Like there's something that happens with time, what our minds choose to remember and what we forget. Perhaps it's our way of spring cleaning our memories, deciding what's important and what's not. Maybe that's why so much of storytelling is metaphor. It's a way to describe what happened without actually saying what happened. I know this story of mine is true. I have the recordings. But it also is a story. It's written and edited. I knew I was going to make this show as I was recording myself, which has an effect. And with each day, I get further and further away from the actual events of the story. I remember once hearing that the word metaphor actually translates to meaning something that is more than true. That when you say you feel like you have the weight of the world on your shoulders, it's obviously not literally true, but somehow it's more accurate. Maybe that's why nature stories and adventure stories are so filled with metaphors. Maybe that's what makes something art, because it's too hard to actually describe what you've been through. So instead, you tell stories. Leaving Red's Meadow and hiking through Devil's Postpile with a stomach full of burgers, we were now 5 days away from finishing our hike, and I felt the weight of the real world starting to crash in around me. Not literally, again, that's a metaphor, but you get the idea. I called my dad and coordinated when and where he would pick us up. It's amazing how quickly this hiking life became the new normal. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back to real life, let alone if I'd be able to. I was scared about what would happen next. I liked this new version of living, and I didn't know if I wanted to go back.
Next time on Trail Wait.
We're 3 days away from finishing the trail.
Yes.
What have you learned?
Trail Wait is produced and written by Andrew Steven. Our story producer is Monty Montapar. Music by Breakmaster Cylinder and Epidemic Sound. Executive produced by Jeff Umbro and the Podglomerate. We're posting photos and more from the trail on our Instagram and Twitter at instagram.com/trailweight and twitter.com/trailweight, as well as on our website, trailweight.co. Thanks so much for listening. Podglomerate Original.